Mother's Day is almost here, and you can get her the most beautiful time-tested gift around. A watch she can wear every day for Movement. Whether mom's into classic dress watches, rare and refined ceramics, or tried-and-true bestsellers, Movement has something she'll love. And right now, you can save big on the best Mother's Day gift ever with up to 50% off site-wide during Movement's Mother's Day sale at MVMT.com. Again, that's up to 50% off at MVMT.com.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. It's me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia, 2,600 meters closer to the stars. And yes, here with you for almost another full hour, talking about things affecting our lives here in Colombia or affecting those others here in the country, of course. So I'm looking always for topical issues and important issues that we should discuss here on the show to inform and keep it interesting. Anyway, so yes, we've got a very special guest again on the show, Claire Austin de Esparza. So some of you will remember her from episode number 20 or something like that, way back in the day. And we had her on talking about her pregnancy here in Colombia and having a baby in a public hospital in sort of western Bogota. And anyway, so that was all very amusing, all very interesting, and everything was great. Now, 2.5 years later, her son is growing up, and they're encountering all sorts of immigration issues about going back to the UK. So Claire Austin is looking to go back to the UK, take her husband with her, Juan. And of course, the immigration policy in the UK has changed significantly and times are harder. So she'll be returning to the UK with her son, Nico, who's 2.5 years old, and her husband has to follow on later when she has the financial, recognition in the eyes of the British state that he can come over and they will not be leeches on the benefit system. So anyway, we'll be talking to her about that, which is very interesting because, of course, it's a family being divided by quite a controversial law. So we're talking about that, and we'll be talking about this, and of course, you know, these sort of things. I mean, why is she going home? I mean, we always get wrapped up in these issues about staying out in Colombia and how good life is and how well we have it all. But it's very interesting now to talk to someone who's been here for a few years and has made the decision to go back. So we'll be talking to Claire all about all of these things and more in the next 45 odd minutes here on Columbia Calling. As always, we like to get emails from you out there. That's columbiacalling@gmail.com. And of course, you can get us on Twitter at Columbia Calling and on our website at columbiacallingradio.com. So as many of you know, we're here in Bogota. I had just a little shout out to some friends who I saw this last week at the launch party for the book entitled The Best of Colombia. Now, I know it's produced by the company owned by Tom Willett, and Tom was on the show as well talking about his Colombia Oil and Gas magazine some months ago as well. So, and in fact, it was good to see so many familiar faces from the Columbia Calling family. We had Sam Miller of Columbia International Real Estate. We had Tom Willett, of course, of his Oil and Gas magazine. There was also Tiffany Cole of Gringo Tuesdays, now opening up her Speakeasy Wednesdays in the Candelaria. Who else did we have? I can't remember. There were so many people from past shows out there, and it was good to talk to them because they were all wanted to follow up on it. So, I think most of you out there enjoy repeat visitors because it gives you a certain familiarity to those people. So, of course, we'll be talking to Claire later on, and you will, of course, remember her from the early days. So we're here in Colombia, and what's going on? Well, the same old political scandals and so on. The government leaked the information that the ELN would be announcing, the agreement for peace dialogues, and then President Santos came out and said that this wasn't true. So what happened in between that sort of 25-minute space, I do not know what's happening. But anyway, it's Colombia. Who knows? There's so much intrigue going on. And our robust economy looks set to shrink, of course, with the desperate prices for petroleum at the moment, for oil. I think it's down to like $33-$34 a barrel right now. This country is dependent on oil exportation and gas exportation and, of course, coal exportation. So highly reliant on this. And of course, with these kind of prices, it's getting pretty tough. You know, I think belts are going to be tightened here and there, and the banks will stop being so irresponsible with their loans. And maybe we'll see a change in the economy in this coming year. Of course, it's very difficult because we have a peace process to pay for, a peace dialogues to pay for at the moment, but a post-conflict period that looks to be more expensive than ever. Anyway, I'm going to start nattering and we're going to take a short break, and we'll be back with Claire Austin, and we'll be talking about her reasons to return to the UK with her young son. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall. Enjoy the show.
And we're back. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall here in Bogota, Colombia. And like every week, we have a very special guest. And in fact, this guest has been on the show once before, way back in the day when we were just a fledgling show back a year or so ago. Anyway, we were talking to her all that time ago about having a child here in Colombia. So those of you who are, you know, sort of habitual listeners will know that I'm talking about Claire Austin, who's originally from Essex in the UK, and she came over, you know, she came over for a boy, and she was in love, and she came over and lived and had a baby over here in Colombia. And we were talking the last time about, let's say, you know, raising a child in Colombia. And, you know, for those of you who listen to the show will know, because I can't stop mentioning it, I'm pretty excited about it, but in April I will become a dad. I guess I'm sort of a dad already, but I will, the actual physical baby will be out in April. But anyway, we want to talk about, you know, raising a family and family life here in Colombia, because of course it's of real interest and importance to those people thinking of coming to Colombia or those people interested in the culture here. So Claire, welcome back on Colombia Calling.
Hello, thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Now Claire, so when we last spoke, I mean, I've still got these vivid images of you in the delivery room, and you're talking about your doctor at the moment there, you know, delivering, and he's trying to make you feel more relaxed.
Yeah.
So he's repeating, you know, the couple of words in English that he knows, so mouse and chocolate, while you're most exposed.
That's right, yeah.
So, but moving on from that, which is it's a fantastic story, but moving on from that, now your little boy is how old?
He's now 2 years, 2 months.
Right, and so for 2 years, 2 months, he's been raised continually here in Bogota, Colombia.
Yeah. Yes, that's right.
And as an English lady, as you know, a native of the south of England, how have you found it raising a child? You know, let's say he's got dual nationality. He's Anglo-Colombian, but how have you found it raising him here?
I mean, there's been good points and there's been bad points. I'd say one of the best things is the amount of family that are around continuously to help me look after him. I'm never short of people that want to take him off my hands, which is a great thing when I need to work. But I mean, the cultural clashes between myself and everybody else that's trying to bring him up has been really difficult. And yeah, I mean, I'd say that would be the biggest problem for me so far, is just that he's not really considered my child, as in my child only. He is the child of the family. So, you know, normally what mum says goes, but here that's completely irrelevant, and basically what anyone else decides is okay. So there's me trying to put my stamp on as a mum and, you know, give him the right kind of rules and routines, and I mean, especially with regards to food issues. I've tried my hardest to, like, get him to eat sensibly and at right times. And it just doesn't work because, I mean, as you know, here food is like dished out every 10 minutes, and it's kind of like a sign of love. Like, the more you can feed someone, the more you love them. So he's fed continuously during the day, which really gets under my skin. And it almost doesn't matter whether I say no or yes, they just do it anyway, which has been really hard for me because you kind of feel like you don't really have the authority that you deserve.
Yeah, I mean, of course, and now it's interesting because the last time we spoke, and it's something, you know, about which I have quite profound opinions as well. But you say, you know, the family, and I remember you say, you know, needing your space. There was we had this conversation, and you know, I have a vast extended in-law cadre here in Colombia, but fortunately, most of them aren't here in Bogota, so we're not living in one another's pockets. I do believe you. I mean, you are now in your own apartment, aren't you? I mean,
no, we still haven't moved there yet.
Oh wow, I thought because
of the plans for the coming year, we were kind of like putting that on hold for a second. So no, it's there, we have the apartment, but we're not using it right now, we're still here with the family, so yeah.
Okay, so yeah, it's got to be tough because, and that's very interesting because you say that you don't have the authority. It's everything is not even that. Everyone's going to have an opinion, and not least, I think, the mother-in-law.
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
but like you said, there's an upside to it. I mean, yeah. there's no shortage of people looking to help out, to help raise, you know, look after Nico while you're at work and so on. Maybe this wouldn't be, you know, I mean, of course you'd have family in the UK, but it's busy, you know, not on hand.
Yeah, they have their own things going on, so it's not as easy to just kind of leave him with someone and expect them to be around. So that's a good thing here. But then also, I mean, because I have to leave him with someone, I tend to go to work and I'm constantly thinking, what are they feeding him? What are they doing with him that I've told them not to? You know, like it's a continuous worry. Like I'm going to get home and he's just going to have had sweets all day long and nothing serious to eat. And I mean, it just stresses me out.
I think my mother, you know, in truth, you know, my mother, rest in peace, she passed away years and years ago. But I think when she left me with my grandmother, so we're talking about my grandmother from, you know, from, God, I can't even remember, Northwood or Islington or somewhere like that.
Yeah.
And when she left me with her, I think that was the permanent fear that I was going to be plied with sweets and like butterscotch popcorn and things like that. But I don't know, maybe it's a continual concern. I don't know, but maybe here they are feeding him more than they should be.
Yeah, I mean, for example, I'll say to people here, like, oh, please don't give him anything to eat, because I offered him his breakfast and he didn't want to eat it, so you know, now he needs to learn that because he didn't eat his breakfast, he has to wait till lunch till he gets his next food.
Yeah.
And they say okay. And then I can hear them. I hear them in the kitchen and they're feeding him crackers and they're going, shh, don't tell your mom. And I think, God, like, I just asked you not to. And yeah. But they just can't do it. They can't resist.
This is true. No, but he's not the only grandchild, right?
No, he's ninth. He's the ninth grandchild.
Ninth grandchild. So, I mean, he must be the newest.
Yeah, he's the youngest. He's the only one of that age now. They're all kind of up and grown now, so okay. He's the baby of the family, yeah.
So he's the consentido?
Yes, of course.
Okay, so that puts it all into perspective a little bit. Yeah. So, and how many family members have you got there under the same roof?
There's only the three of us plus my mother-in-law and a nephew, so there's like five of us here.
That's in not so bad.
No, but I mean, the others live relatively close, so I mean, you know what it's like. They just kind of turn up unannounced, and you know, you're just expecting a quiet day, and then up comes all the family, and yeah, it's every day is a surprise.
Yeah, this is true. I mean, no organising.
No, my mum was here over Christmas, and every day we tried to plan to do something, it all went to pot because something would happen, or someone would turn up, or they had other plans, and yeah, it was crazy.
And when your mother came over, did your in-laws, you know, do the best to make her feel welcome and give the Colombian embrace?
Yeah, no, they're fantastic. I mean, they are like such loving people. They're so friendly and they made my mum feel right at home. And actually, it's really funny because my mum doesn't speak any Spanish and my mother-in-law doesn't speak any English whatsoever. And so the two of them were trying to communicate at times and about Nicholas, and it was just a lot of hand actions, and I mean, it was really funny.
I'm sure it was. I mean, but it's got to be nice. I mean, this is, you know, it really puts it back to the sort of the base relationships, almost animalistic, you know, just hand actions.
I think actually the two of them, like my mum and my mother-in-law, they get along much better than I do with my mother-in-law because, I mean, even though I'm here and she knows me and it's probably a completely different kind of love, the two of them, they have the same thing in common, which is Nicholas. So
yeah.
They both of them have got this in the back of their head. They know that wherever we live, one of them isn't going to be around him. And so they have that equal fear of, you know, like growing up without the grandchild around, and the same kind of feelings that wants to spoil him and everything. So the difference is I'm able to tell my mum, please don't do that, and then get cross with her if she does it, whereas here I can't.
Yeah, you tread this fine line of etiquette.
That's right. Like, how far do I push it before I'm kicked out the house?
I don't think they'd ever kick you out of the house. No. But anyway, so I mean, fantastic stuff. And you say the family in as much. I think it's probably a greater blessing than yes. Of course, you're frustrated that perhaps you don't have the authority and so on and so forth. But you've got to say I'm looking forward to having my little boy in April. And honestly, I cannot. I don't know the situation yet because I haven't had the baby. There are 12 uncles and aunts on one side, but all scattered along the coast. And so my wife doesn't even know how many cousins she has. But they will all be there. And I read an article I've started to read voraciously about becoming a father because I really just don't know anything about it.
No, of course.
And I read an article the other day where it says, just even going to the bathroom is a little mini holiday from your baby.
Yeah.
And I was like, God, if I've got that much family around, I'm going to have loads of mini holidays. I don't know. Does that make me a bad guy? I don't know.
No, you do need your own space. And that is nice. I mean, that is another one of the things I love here, because at times when I just need to get on with something, or I need to make a phone call, things like now, like I need silence to be here with you. And so I just kind of leave him with one of the kids and say, you know what, go and play with him for an hour, do what you need to do. And that's really nice because they don't come back and pester me, and they just kind of take it upon themselves to play up into that role and look after him. So
this is good.
It's fantastic. Yeah.
And have in your experience, I don't know. I mean, do you have nephews and nieces back in the UK?
Yeah, I do. I mean, not many. No, I don't have nephews and nieces. I have cousins, younger
cousins.
Okay,
little cousins.
No, my sister is. It's only the two of us, and she doesn't have any children yet. So no, nieces and nephews I don't have, but cousins. We were only a small family, so for me it's completely. That's probably the hardest thing, is that I'm not used to being around that many people all the time.
Yeah, so you were a family of four.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too. So I can understand fully where you come from. Yeah. And I am really, really better than you think. But I was thinking, you had little cousins, let's say. Have you seen any differences in the way that, say, your little cousins were brought up to the way that Nico's being brought up here in Colombia?
I mean, it was a long time ago. The only thing is the rules. That's the only thing. I mean, here he is just so spoiled, like completely spoiled rotten. And I think that's part of the reason that I'm trying to get him back to the UK now, is because I want to be able to put him back into play groups and get him to socialise. Because, yeah, he socialises with the family, but he's the king of the family. So he's not really used to having people say no to him or not having his own way all the time. And he really has no idea how to live by a structure and a routine and rules, which is a big thing for me. I mean, that's something I'm really used to. So, I'd say that's the biggest change.
Interesting stuff. Now, I just want one thing about sort of gender. Do you think that that he'd be raised the same way here in Colombia, as the king of the family, if he were a girl, if your child had been a girl?
Think it would be worse.
Really?
I think she would be, if he'd been a girl, I think that she would be totally the princess. Most of the family that are here with their boys.
Okay.
Of the nine grandchildren, there's only two girls. And they're much older. They're one's 20, one's 16 now. So I think, if it had been a little girl, I think she would have been even more spoiled and maybe even more protected. And I think I would also have been less able to do things that I want to do. I think it'd be worse.
Wow, I hadn't thought that, because we're going to have a little boy, and I know that this is going to knock my brother-in-law off the throne in the eyes of of my mother-in-law. He can do no wrong. It doesn't matter what happens. He's the middle child, which normally forgotten, the middle child, but he's the middle child, but he's the varón, he's the man, and so in the eyes of his mum, he is. Oh, bless him. Bless him. He can do no wrong. But now he's the one who's been upset. that we're having a boy. Yeah. So I think it's very interesting that indeed.
Yeah, I mean, my mother-in-law keeps, I mean, at times she'll sort of walk around the house saying like, who's my little king in Spanish? And mom, me? And then she's, no, I'm not talking about you anymore. Like, and it's almost like that role has just passed on from Juan, who's her only son, down to Nicholas now. So the attention's kind of gone.
Oh, no, but you're under all sorts of stress then. If you've got Juan, your husband, who's the only son, of course, who was of course, the king and remains the king. But now there's another little king.
Yes.
So, of course, yeah, Juan, of course, is the was up until recently the apple of her eye.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So interesting, isn't it, the dynamic of these things.
It is, it's crazy, and I think I'm kind of seen as a, I mean, obviously we're planning to leave here now, and so I'm kind of looked at now as the one who's stealing both her men, because he's the youngest, he's the youngest of her children, and also the only boy.
And we're back. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard Cole. We're talking to Claire Austin, who's, I think, in Fontibon at the moment, so a barrio here in Bogota. And we're talking about raising her child here in Colombia. But we've got the news that the family's great, but the family's also not a hindrance, but it's also, you know, very much a present entity here in Colombia. So anyway, but before I say anything else, we're going to say, now, Claire, your new plan is to move back to the UK.
Yes. Yes, it is. Oh, well, actually, it's been our plan ever since day one, really, that just hasn't been able to become possible. And I mean, it's a really long story. Do you want me just to jump in, or
yeah, jump in. Go and tell us a little bit about it.
I mean, basically, the minute I found out I was pregnant here, I was dying to get back to the UK.
Sure.
Purely because I was terrified. And then I kind of ended up having the baby here. I managed to find a job, and so things kind of went well for a little while. And then the problems we have been talking about with regards to the family and me not feeling kind of as independent as maybe I should as a new mom, and all of those things started to kick in. And so we decided again to start looking to go back to the UK. The problem being is that for Juan to get a visa to come back with me is almost impossible. There's several different ways in which we can do it, but they all involve, I mean, the financial requirement for us to go back as a family is just horrendous. So we kind of kept looking into ways that we could do it, getting our hopes up, and then realizing that, no, we can't do that, and so scrapping it, trying to find another way, and it kept going for about a year and a half. And there's been one option which has been possible from the beginning, which we've put aside because it means us being separated. But now, being that it is the only way that we can go back, we've decided just to take the plunge and do it. Nicholas is at a point where he's old enough to be separated, but still young enough that it really probably won't have too much of an effect on him as long as we stay in contact on Skype. So yeah, the plan is for me to go first. I'm going to be leaving next month, actually in 2 weeks. And I have to be in a position where I'm working, earning an annual salary of $18,600. For 6 months, I have to be doing that. And I think, well, we're not sure whether we also have to have an enormous savings, which I think is about $17,000, or whether that's a plus, but not a necessity. And then hopefully after the 6 months, we can apply for Juan to come directly to the UK to be with us again. But we're still really not sure as to how that's going to work out. And obviously we have the elections in May, which may change everything. So I may be back here. Who knows?
It's a big one. I mean, you've been here, what are you saying, over 2.5 years now?
Yeah, 3 years. Just over 3 years now.
3 years. I mean, it's a long time.
It is.
You're not an old lady or anything. I mean, it's young. I mean, you're young and you've been here, and it's not an easy place to make things, a life of things.
No, I think it would have been easier. I mean, I have friends here who have said to me, like, oh, maybe things would have been better for you here if you lived more centrally to where everybody else, like all the other expats, are living, and you would have had more friends around you, more support. You would have been able to go out more without worrying about your safety so much. And to a degree, yeah, that may have made a big difference. But I don't know. I think, to be honest, if Nicholas wasn't in the equation and I was living here still sort of without him, then yeah, I'd probably feel comfortable for a few more years and, you know, really discover the country and do the traveling that we wanted to do. But you know, with children, when they come along, they ruin all those plans.
But it's not ruining. It's just changing. And of course, that people always say, you know, the greatest change.
Of course, no, I'm joking.
Yeah,
I can still travel with him. It's just not as easy.
No.
And I mean, the thing is that changes. It's, I mean, my plan now isn't really to travel as much as much to settle down somewhere. And yeah, I don't know. Without him, it would have been different. But now that he's here, I'm thinking about schools. I'm thinking about what it's going to be like. I mean, I don't want to teach English. And as you know, unless you want to teach English here, it's kind of impossible to find jobs. And
is that what you're doing at the moment?
That, of course, is a big problem for me. So lots of things, lots of factors involved. So we just kind of decided to take a big plunge and give it a go.
Yeah.
Hopefully it'll work out.
What's your job at the moment here, Claire?
I'm actually working with an American family. Well, they're half American, half Chinese. And they've got two little girls, one's 6 and one's 3. And I'm actually teaching them English, but not how to actually teach English, because obviously they speak it.
Yeah.
But teaching them how to read, how to write. And I'm now following a homeschooling curriculum from the States. And actually teaching them like homeschooling with geography, science, math. So, yeah, I mean, that's really good. And I work part-time hours, so it still gives me time with Nicholas, which is perfect.
Well, it sounds like, you know, you've got things going for you. But, yeah, I can understand now, you know, when you went over just a little bit of the financial burden that is levied upon, let's say you are a UK citizen, you want to go back with your British son, you know, Anglo-Colombian, but he is British.
Yeah.
£18,600. I mean, it's not a small amount of money.
No. And also, I mean, my background, the work that I've done in the UK and that I'm trained in is in healthcare, which, as we all know, does not pay the best.
No.
So that's almost, I mean, it's almost impossible to get a job that I'm used to doing and that I'm trained to do that earns that much money. So it means that I may have to go back and try and find a different kind of job and start all over from scratch again, which is annoying.
Yeah, and I have
got a fantastic boss back home from the company that I worked for before, who has actually said that he's going to be trying his hardest to get me a position back in the company and that he knows what I'm requiring and everything. So fingers crossed that something works out with that, because I'd love to work for the same company again.
But that would be phenomenal to be able to jump back in.
Yeah, of course.
That would be phenomenal. Now, in a savings account of £17,000, is there anyone in the UK that's got £17,000 in the bank? I don't think so.
I don't think so. I mean, it's not even that you can have the savings tied up in property or... I mean, it has to be in a bank account, in your name, untouched for 6 months. So, I mean, if it's only the annual earning that we need, then that would be sort of possible, doable.
Yeah.
If we also need the savings, we might be stuck. So I don't know. We're still hoping. I'm hoping to find some legal advice in the UK and try and get maybe with citizens' advice and try and find someone that can actually help me, because I've been reading through the law and I mean it's just so confusing. I can't get my head around it.
Yeah, it's tough, but it's you know, one of the reasons I wanted you to come back on the show is that this is incredibly timely, your problem. I hate to say it like that, but it seems to be in the press quite a lot. There's the issue that has been all over the UK press about the Colombian wife of an Englishman, but they've lived in Spain for God knows how long, and every time she wants to go to visit the family, his family up there, she has to get a tourist visa or whatever, which costs 100 or 200 or whatever, however many pounds each time, which it's just stifling, you know?
It's crazy. And I think actually she's now been granted, and this is the other loophole that we're kind of using as a possibility. If it means that he can't come directly to the UK after the 6 months, there is a loophole which a couple of our friends have just done, which is if we go to Europe, because obviously, England is part of the European Union, but not with regards to immigration. It's completely separate. So there is this loophole that if we can get to Europe and then stay there for 6 months, and I'm working there for 6 months, and we apply for residency in the country that we've gone to, so whether it be Spain, Germany, whatever, the UK then have to let us both in as a family, because under European law, he is the dependent of my son. Like, he's my son's dependent. So... there is that loophole, but then obviously that's another expensive way around, because we have to then afford rent for 6 months in Spain and or wherever we go, and it all adds up, you know.
Yeah, it's not just a trip home. It's not just a trip to Europe. You're looking at the whole investment of a life.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, this is an expensive thing. It's not a 2 week trip home, just the airfares and staying with the family. You're looking, it's tough. I mean, it just seems so prohibitive. In your honest opinion, in your personal opinion, do you think that? I mean, obviously, this politics. We're not going to talk about politics, but this policy of prohibiting people of entering, family members of entering into the UK, it can only have been brought about, and the politicians in power are justifying it due to the, I guess, benefit seekers and the big scaremongering. But is it really that bad that people, honest people like yourself who just want to make a family, and just want to live, you're being punished?
That's right. I mean, I have really mixed feelings about it because, part of the reason that it's not as easy for us to go back is because, and the financial requirements is there to cover the fact that once we're back, we're not going to access the benefit system, which obviously I understand. I've worked with people who need benefits, like with disabilities, and so I do understand that those benefits are for people who need them. But what I don't understand is how that they're stopping us going home as a family, even though it's my country, and yet there's nothing wrong with anyone from anywhere else in Europe, whether they have family or not, going to the UK and using those benefits.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that for me is a huge heartbreaker because, they don't have the rights to be there. I mean, they don't have family, they don't have work. I watched a documentary about Romanians.
Yeah.
There's thousands of them that are going to the UK this year because they've got these new visas they're allowed to go, and they go there, they don't work, they literally become thieves, they lay on the street, they become homeless, they rob people, and they claim asylum, and then they get the benefits. And so, that breaks my heart. But on the other hand, I'm torn because maybe part of me is thinking that they're only going there because they want a better life from wherever it is that they've been living. And if the UK permits them to do that, then why wouldn't they? I mean, that's what I'm trying to do after all. I'm trying to go back with my husband for a better life. It's just that why should they be allowed and we're not?
I understand. I don't think you're being xenophobic or anything along those lines. I think because you're speaking as a Briton here who wants just there is a reason why, for example, you think that you're going to get a better life. There is a reason to this because, there's corruption in the UK, of course, but it's of a different type. And, people pay their taxes, the roads are paved, the security is good, the police force, you can ask them questions, the transport is good. And, of course, education, we cannot knock the fact that even, I'm privately educated, of course, but state education is good in the UK if you were and it's good compared to most countries, but of course comparing to public education in Bogota, it's going to be without being arrogant or anything, it's miles ahead in the UK. And these are the reasons why you want to go back. I think
that's right. I think I said in the last interview we did that the idea of him going to school here terrified me. And it does. Now that we're getting, he's 2.5 he's going to be 3 in October. He doesn't go to a playgroup yet because even my husband, who's Colombian, doesn't trust them. So he would rather that Nicholas stayed here with the family. And so the idea of school is even worse for me. I don't know if you've had any experiences with people that work in schools here or have children here in schools, but it's basically a long-term babysitting. The children don't go there necessarily to learn. There's classes of 40, 50 kids. And the teachers, they're not allowed to put in place any discipline. So the kids kind of run riot and they're there just to be babysat while the parents work. I've got the nephew here that lives with us. He just failed a year at school because here they do tests every year, unlike in the UK. So depending on if you pass or fail, you go ahead or you resit the year. And he'd failed a couple of times now, And we were looking to change his school because currently he's in a private school, which is costing a fortune. He's now being transferred back to a public school. And he was just about to enroll, and one of the other family members that we have said, oh no, my friend goes to that school. And she said, which session have you been given? Because here the schools, they start from the morning or you can go in the afternoon, right? And he said, well, I've been given the afternoon slot. And she said, no. She said, turn it down. Don't go there. She said, because the kids in that school, come the afternoon, they turn up with alcohol, they go with knives, they're part of gangs. Like, it's so dangerous. And she said that she'd left that school for that reason. So Juan, who's a teacher, had to pull some strings to get his nephew enrolled at the school that he was working at, just so that he wasn't at risk of violence or drugs or drink. And yeah, it's terrifying, absolutely terrifying.
And as you say, Juan is a teacher, he works at a school, and yet, and then he is a man, he's saying, I don't trust these playgroups.
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
Yeah, he's actually not working there anymore. He got a new job this month. But he, I mean, last term, just before Christmas, he had a run-in with a couple of students. I mean, he was actually, like, almost physically, but definitely mentally and verbally abused by this child in front of the entire year and all, well, maybe about four or five of the teachers. And nothing was done about it. I mean, the guy was suspended from his lessons for, I think, about a month, which meant he couldn't do any work, so he got to do nothing during the day. But then he was allowed to come back for the prom and join in with all the fun days and things to help them raise money for the school. And so, I mean, really, what's the point in that? That kid didn't learn any lesson at all. And he was, I mean, I was there. I was shaking. It was terrifying. And Juan just said, you know, that's how it happened to him. Nothing gets done. Like, the parents don't want you to discipline their kids. And if you try to, they consider it, you know, as a teacher, you've abused their child and you've pushed the line, and they really just have no, you know, no rules or regulations, which scares me a lot.
It's terrifying. And, you know, if I take an example from Canada or something, I know a little bit about education across a few places.
Yeah.
If you threatened a teacher in Canada, you'd not only be expelled, suspended, whatever, you
right.
wouldn't be allowed to go back to that state for school.
Yeah.
Your family would have to uproot and go to a different state.
Right.
I mean, you know, proper measures being taken.
Of course.
Yes. teachers have it hard here. I mean, you know, I mean, I think they have it hard everywhere, but they have it hard here. I mean, just terrifying, really, when you think about it. And then, of course, you said, you know, your nephew who's going to a private school, really, really expensive. No, I mean, you know, not accessible to everyone.
No. I mean, actually, we were, having made the decision for me to now leave, we were talking to one of Juan's sisters, and she said that we'd made the right decision because she's got two young kids, both in primary school, but because she wanted them to go to a school where she didn't have to worry about them, so she's paying private. And she said, literally, after she gets paid, and then she's paid out for the schooling, the uniform, the buses, because you have to pay for everything here, like, nothing is given to you. The books, all of the materials. She's left with almost not enough to live on, which means that she's then having to do extra hours and pay for childcare in the afternoons while she's still working. You know, it's just, it's constant. There's no break. There's almost no time for anything.
This self-perpetuating cycle of debt.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
No, but it's to move on from this, and it's just interesting because, you know, we've talked in this, you know, let's say the last half an hour or so about various things, and schooling us, of course, is key. But one thing that has popped up on a couple of occasions was, of course, you know, your son being fed behind your back, and also the way you discussed you know, lack of discipline in the schools, and so it is discipline, and I've already felt, you know, with some of the statements that I've said, you know, to my wife and so on, that I'm going to be an absolute disciplinarian to my child. And I can only wonder and worry what my in-laws are going to think about that.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's if you get a chance to do it.
Well, I'm not living under the same roof. So I think, you know, but I've already said, you know, I don't I'm, you know, I was brought up a stickler for discipline, and that reflects in my behavior today. You know, I do believe that being an Englishman, I'm very good at waiting in a queue. I'm very good at being polite and everything like that. But yeah, and on time. But surely these are things that, you know, basic things that should be taught. All right. Well, I mean, I guess you're trying to be, you know, disciplined with Nico, but it's got to be tough.
It is. I mean, I don't even know how to go about explaining. I work with people who have got learning difficulties and autism, you know, things like that. And those, I'm used to working with those people and with children the same, that they need those rules. And it's proven that having rules gives you guidance, helps you learn what's right and wrong, helps you learn what you can and can't do. You know, it puts you in place. And it's not to say that it's a bad thing. I mean, rules doesn't mean, like, I'm not talking about, you know, whippings and, you know, like, putting them in the corner when they've done naughty things. You know, that doesn't have to be that way, but they need a rule. And, yeah, that just doesn't. And so I've tried so hard to implement that, knowing that it works and knowing that it's positive. And every time I try, I just get looked at like I'm evil.
The evil
and, you know, it's like, oh, poor child, what are you doing to him? Just let him play, he's just a baby. And, you know, like, he's got all of the rest of his life to learn these rules. No, but no, he needs to learn now. You know, my point is that he needs to learn from the beginning what's right and what's wrong. And it's evident, because actually I'm embarrassed at the fact that my child is, as much as I love him to bits, but he has no idea how to socialise. And so if he doesn't get his way, he's not at all worried about raising his hand and slapping you and saying no and running away. And to me, that just is devastating. You know, I've tried so hard to tell him not to do that. And I wondered, like, you know, where does he get this from? Why does he slap? Why does he do that? And then I caught one day, he was in the kitchen, he was trying to eat something, and my mother-in-law was slapping him and saying, no, you can't have that yet, no, no, no. But it was a game, and she was laughing, and he was laughing, and they were slapping each other, and I thought, oh my God, you know, that's where it's come from.
Well, there, you saw it directly.
I saw it with my own eyes, and I told her, you know, please don't do that, because, yeah, for you it's a game, but for him he thinks that every time someone says no, he can slap them.
Because at this age he's an absolute, he's a sponge.
Yeah, he is. He's very, I mean, he's so intelligent, and that's part of the problem, because he doesn't realise, you know, if you can do it, why can't I?
Yeah, this is true. So what is your, what is the date of your return to the UK with Nico?
The 14th.
14th of February. Wow. Yeah. So, we're, I mean, really, it's 2 weeks away.
It is, yeah. And I mean, part of the rush for it was that my boss is going to be going back to the States and starting her own business there. And so I'm not going to have any more work with her for a little while. And so I just, you know, I mean, I just didn't want to sit here going crazy, because that's really what I do when Juan, when Juan's working and I'm not working, I'm here at the house.
Yeah.
I'm kind of refined to the house. I don't really go out unless I've got a troop of family following me. And, you know, there's no space for it. There's no independence. I can't drive here. More because I don't want to than I can't, but
it is terrifying.
It is, it's scary. So I don't drive. It's not like I can just put Nico in the car and go for a trip. Or so it's really restricting. And for me, I just feel like I need to get part of my life back. I need to get working again, but doing what I love, you know, not teaching English, but just doing what I'm good at. And being able to take him swimming, take him to the park, take him to a playgroup, you know, like things that normal children should be able to do without worrying about what's going to happen there.
Yeah, I think you've put it incredibly succinctly and very, you know, personally, you've laid it out, but it's the truth. I mean, you know, I've got a few weeks, two months left before my son is born, and I'm already beginning to worry.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a journalist. You're a healthcare. You know, you're in healthcare. I'm a journalist. Neither of us earn a lot of money. So I'm beginning to get concerned about this, and then people are saying, oh, this private schooling, and you need to give like a $10,000, you know, gift. I'm like, where from? Where? So who knows what will happen in the future? I don't know.
I mean, I think that I spoke with another friend who was planning to have children within the next few years. He lives here too, and he'd said to me that he would probably do the same as myself, you know. And he thinks that it's a good idea for the kids here at a young age to be surrounded by family. And I mean, it's a good rooting for the rest of their lives. You know, they learn a good family qualities, family respect and things like that, which maybe you don't get in the UK. And that's good up until a point, but then it gets to a point where he said he probably, you know, as well, would go back to the UK for the education, for the safety. They've got more room to grow there, because here they're very, like, smothered at all times. And I think at a point, a child just needs to be able to go off and play in the park, but without you having to stand right behind him the whole time, you know?
Yeah, scuff his knees without a billion family members.
Yeah, right? Just, you know, get into the scrapes, get into mischief, but learn, you know, there's a consequence.
Yeah. Well, listen, Claire, listen, I'd like to say thank you very much for your time. You've been very expressive, and you've shared with us some incredibly personal experiences and thoughts, and you know, this will help anyone out there thinking of coming to Colombia or thinking, oh, having children out here, you know, it will help them. That's the idea, you know, not just to speak ill of Colombia, just to inform, you know.
That's right, yeah.
So again, thank you, and good luck on the return to England. I don't know when I'll next be over. It's about, I mean, we're over in October for the first time in 5 years, so so I don't know when we'll be over, but if we do get over, I'll try and make a trip out to Essex.
Yeah, that's quite.
So anyway, I'd like to thank you again for your time. We've been talking to Claire Austin, talking about raising her child here in Colombia and the return to the UK. You can find her website's An Idiot Abroad. I will post that on the Facebook site. I've been Richard McColl. This has been Colombia Calling. I hope you've enjoyed the show.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.